You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada and indeed the world's top leaders to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us. Justin Trudeau, Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Sir Richard Branson. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thinking of thoughtful leaders leading some of our more interesting organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Marie-Josée Desrochers. Marie-Josée runs Place des Arts, one of Canada's largest arts center. In fact, the largest in Canada. And outside of the actual venue, Place des Arts also helps organize countless musical and festival-related events in Montreal throughout the summer. They are very much responsible for the unique artistic culture atmosphere Montreal is so well known for. MJ, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Carl.
So do you go by MJ in English sometimes, or is it Marie-Josée?
Yes, MJ is fine.
Okay. Tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up, and what was your family up to when you were young?
Yes, I grew up in Joliette. It's a city 1 hour from Montreal in the region of Lanaudière. And my parents run a family business. We had the big garage, auto repair and gas pump. So my father was a mechanic and my mother was the general manager. And so he was recognized to be an excellent mechanic. And my mom learned everything by herself, I mean, in terms of bookkeeping. And so it was really a family business. And my sister and I, my sister is older than me, we were part of that. So at a very young age, I remember going by myself and fuel a car to serve a client who was waiting. And I took the readings at night, and my mom had confidence in me. And I knew that she had at some point balanced the number, all the numbers. So I liked it very much, actually, being in this garage. And I learned, yes, to be excellent, but I certainly learned to be responsible and accountable. So my childhood was between the garage and between music, piano lessons, violin lessons, concert halls.
So you, a lot of family business, so you were probably 7 or 8 and you're helping your mom and dad. Like, you know, they take you to work.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I went to my dad was a janitor and I would go to the school with him on the weekends. And just because, you know, you had to do something with the kids. But it's interesting because I do some research in family business, and it's dad is the CEO often, but mom is there because it's at the kitchen table. And mom may not be the CEO because back then it may have not been allowed or seen as proper, but really it's and your mother in some ways is the CEO in a sense. And
yes.
Your dad was the talent of being the mechanic.
I'm able to say that today, but when I was young, of course, it was the garage to my father, but she managed everything. So for me, to see my mom going to the garage at night, as an example, it was something that was normal. And to have my mom, she knew everything about mechanics. So it was, had a different mom, and I was very proud of her because I know that she worked very hard. And yes, you're right. But now I can say that she was the CEO, and I'm very proud of her. She's really an inspiration for me.
Did you live above the garage?
No.
Okay.
No, but the high school and the concert hall was a 10-minute walk. So
Okay. It
was very near. Yeah.
Interesting,
very close.
When you think of mechanics and cars, grease and that sort of thing,
yeah.
Where piano and art seems to be kind of a different part of social life or social strata, how did you get involved in music?
Oh, because my family, and that's right, by the way, I was a little boy when I was young, and I liked to smell, you know, the, maybe I shouldn't say that, but the smell of the gas and the smell of a concert hall, you know, all the woods. I remember very clearly the all the what it smells. So my family is, I came from a middle class family, and the Joliette was really a pole of education and a pole of culture, certainly in music. So it was kind of a system. So we had the piano at home, like a lot of Quebecers, and they wanted me to give me good education. And so I started the piano. I was four. My parents and the teacher thought that I would quit, but I never quit. And then my father was a fiddler. This is why he was so good at mechanic, because he had a good ear to find all the problems in the cars. So they decided, okay, you will play the violin, but you will play it correctly. And there was a big system in Joliette of youth orchestra. So I began the piano. I was very young too. So I did both till 20 years old. So I played a lot of in youth orchestra. I played the violin, played the piano, and so I was very busy.
Do you have a piano at home now?
Yes, I don't play, but yes, and I have actually two. And my husband thought that I would sell one of them, but they are like my boyfriends. Okay. I need my piano at home.
So. Ah, okay. If you're tuning in now, you're listening to the CO Series, and today I'm speaking with MJ Desrochers, CEO of Montreal's Place des Arts. You studied a bachelor's and master's in piano, if I understand correctly.
Yes.
What does that entail? Like, do you just play the piano all day? Like, there must be classes and... What do you study?
Yes, it's very an interesting question, because when I did my master's degree in piano and performance, so that means that I had to do a lot of recitals alone, I was not quite sure what I would like to do after my master's degree. And my piano teacher said to me, you know, Marie-Josée, the most difficult thing that you would have to accomplish is to play in recital. And he was wrong. And he said, after that, you will be able to embrace any career that you want. And was he was right, because, of course, studying music, not only to do a master's degree, but if you study music, yes, you will learn, of course, the discipline. But you will learn also to plan in advance. You cannot begin to practice a week before your recital. So you need, like an athlete, you need to plan in advance. But also, and it gave me a sense of analysis, because what people don't know is behind the music, there is a real structure of analysis. It's like mathematics. So I was very good at it, and it was my strength. And as a pianist, the structure is horizontally and vertically. And of course, it gave me a sense of anticipation, because when you play, you know, a 15-minute piece, you have to anticipate all the time, but to be at the present. So the notion of time is very important when you play in a recital. And finally, of course, it helped me to manage my stress. Yes, till to this date, he was right. There's nothing like stressful like being alone with your piano without any, you know, score in front of you, and to play very well. But at the end of the day, music is about emotion. So, you know, beyond everything that I just said, you need to worry about the communication with the public, because it's about emotion.
So seriously, engineers or CPAs study that, and they become, you know, managers like yourself. But they say they bring the engineering mindset to work years later, or the CPA mindset. It's interesting, because you're saying the pianist mindset is something that informs your job today and how you think.
Yes. Yes, because when you are a pianist, you have everything. You don't need to have another instrument. You are alone. You are like an orchestra. So you have to manage yourself, you have to be structured. And all the notions that I've learned when I was at the university, or when I was a pianist, helped for me today, still today. And I maybe we will go into that later on, but I taught the piano for more than 10 years also. So yes, I'm glad to have done it now. No, it was not, you know, when I was at the university, I was really wondering what I would do after that. But I'm glad that I did some intense music.
When you sit down at the piano, there's 1,000 people there. They're all eyes are on you. So that can be very stressful. But once you start playing, does it kind of just become less nerve-wracking when you, once you start the first note, you just kind of do what you do?
Yes, you're right. And this is what we wish for. This is what we are looking for. And one of my daughter, she played the piano at a very high level when she was young. And she came first in the competition, Canada competition, when she was, I think, 12 or 13. And she used that expression. She was in her bubble, you know. So it's at the same time being in your bubble and at the same time communicate with the public. And, you know, there's nothing most exciting like doing a recital, even if it is so stressful. But, you know, this little drug that we came on the endorphin, it's so exciting. And so, yes, never experienced that kind of...
But you feel the audience? Like, are you, as you're playing the piano, you're aware of the audience emotions?
We are certainly aware. Certainly, we listen to the sound of the piano, but we listen to the sound or the noises of the audience. And yes, you feel, even if you have only 5% in the audience, you play for them as well as you play for 1,000. So it's really the same. So this communication is very, very, very special.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Marie-Josée Durocher, CEO of Montreal's Place des Arts. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll ask MJ about how she made the transition from piano education to management, being the COO at the Orchestre Symphonique de Montréal.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again. You're listening to the CEO Series. Today, I'm speaking with Marie-Josée Durocher, CEO of Montreal's Place des Arts. There's a Stradivarius violin. Like, these are incredibly rare, expensive violins. But there's better pianos. And, like, I mean, there's bad pianos, but there's a great piano. Have you ever played on a great piano or on a great violin?
On a great piano, certainly, at the university.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, and it's fantastic. And this is where at some point in my when I was a student, I needed to buy a grand piano because, you know, the keyboard is not the same. It's very mechanic, actually. I don't want to go into the details, but yes, I needed a grand piano. And, you know, violinist, it's like buying a house, really, really. So, and it's part of if you want to do a career, you need a very good instrument. You need to be a very good performer, but you need to be a very good instrument, like a conductor need to have very good musicians in front of him or her to make the most of it. So, yes.
So why aren't you a great concert pianist wandering around the world today?
Because I was not good enough. It's okay. Simple as that. No, but you know, I realized that when I was pretty young, but for me, education was so important that I wanted to teach and to have, for me, it's part of the renewal of the public also. I was a good kind of company that can, I was able, really, I was a good teacher, but to have an international career, it's so rare, especially these days. So, it was not for me.
Marie-Josée, clearly you're a leader today. You're the CEO here at the Place des Arts. When did you first see yourself potentially as a leader? Was it as a girl in high school and at university? When did you say to yourself, I might be a leader?
Maybe I will go back to this youth orchestra, because when I was in the youth orchestra as a teenager, I was sitting at the front row of the second violin. So that means that I have kind of a role of leadership. Okay. And then later on, when I was a teacher, you know, I had to manage to inspire all the young students that I had. And when I was at the university, I started a classical radio show, actually, with my best friend there. So I needed to contribute. And it was the same when I became at the OSM. I was asked to be part of some strategic meetings. And so I like to convince, to suggest ideas based on facts. So I always did, I think, more than people expected me to do. So, yes. But of course, I didn't know at the time that it was about leadership. So, but now I can say that, yes, I liked to contribute a lot and to be in front of this contribution.
How did you end up at the OSM? You ended up being the COO at the Orchestre Symphonique de Montréal.
Yeah, and it's Orchestre Symphonique de Montréal, so it's really easy to remember. Yes, it's a very interesting story, actually, because I taught piano, and when I was studying, I used to help in management of some micro music organizations, and I was working as a researcher for Radio-Canada, and then I was working for the Festival de la Nadir in Joliette, which was a big international festival. So I was already in arts administration, really. So then I decided to go to HEC to do the diploma in arts administration. And at some point, I had to do a presentation of three different chapters of management of the OSM, Montreal Symphony Orchestra. But what I didn't know is that they had invited Michel Courchain. And Michel Courchain was, at the time, CEO of the OSM. And she liked my presentation. So after that, I called her and she met with me. She had nothing for me at the time for the OSM, but prior to be at the OSM, she was deputy of Minister of Culture. It was before her career in politics. And one day she called me because she asked me to be part of the communication and marketing teams. That was at the time, all the department was outsourced by a firm. So this is how I came in at the OSM. And then after that, I was asked to be director of communication very, very fast. I worked for the agency, came back. And then Madeleine Caro, still today CEO of the OSM, arrived and she stopped the outsourcing contract. So I had a choice to make. And so I decided to stay to the OSM and to stay with Madeleine Caro, and we developed and we went through different chapters of the OSM.
So is she one of your mentors?
Mentors, you know, I have different mentors, and I think that you can learn from people different things. So I've learned a lot, yes, with different people, even Madeleine, Michel, Benoît Gignac, Ken Nagano, of course, Lucien Bouchard, who is still president of the board. And I think that you should take and should be inspired by those leaders. Different persons can bring you different things. There is not one person that can give you everything. So I've learned a lot in observing and yes.
You learn how a CEO acts by watching Madeleine, Lucien Bouchard, Kent Nagel. So some ways, can you occasionally see a little bit of Lucien coming out in you, like in a sense, or how you act, or Kent, like, do you feel that you got a little bit of from each of them.
Yeah, I should be very humble, but of course I've learned a lot from those people in different matters. I had the chance in my career to have relationships with very inspiring persons, but it's up to you to learn from them and to learn what you have to learn. So yes, I've learned a lot from all those people, and also a certain thing about the depth in the way you do things, okay. Certainly.
Marie-José, what is the Place des Arts? I understand it's the largest performing arts center in Canada. Why is that important to Montreal and Quebec?
Okay, first of all, allow me to give an overview of this Place des Arts, because yes, you're right, it's the largest performing arts center in Canada. We have like six halls for a total among around 8,000 seats, from 100 to 3,000 seats, which is Wilfrid Pelletier Hall. But we have also three restaurants, two stores, offices that we rent, one of the largest parking in Montreal, and we have public spaces. We have, of course, the Esplanade, the outdoor public space that welcome, all the majors festival during the summer and the winter, and we have also public spaces that we animate, with some events and exhibition room, with some activities that we do for like outreach programs. And we are also a connection to the metro and to the underground of Montreal. So that means that we are really performing arts that is always open for the public, but also open for the citizens. And Place des Arts play really structuring role of what we call the living arts, not only for Montreal, but for the Quebec, because we sell like 50% of the tickets. It's for the cultural district here in Montreal. It's sold by Place des Arts. So it's very important. So it's important for the Quebec in terms of structuring everything, but it's also, we contribute to the positioning of Montreal as a metropolis, a cultural metropolis, because it's an international performing arts, but also very encouraging to the community.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Marie-José de Rocher, CEO of Montreal's Place des Arts. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO series. Next up, we'll ask MJ about the unique festival culture Montreal offers during the summer.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, you're listening to the CEO series. Today I'm speaking with Marie-José de Rocher, CEO of Montreal's Place des Arts. So it's something where one of the great joys of summer, other than it's warm, is you have so many festivals in Montreal.
Yes.
And it's wonderful, and a lot of them are around this building.
Yes.
Well, the jazz festival's next door. And, we come by the metro to get here, and so we go through your facility. And it's just a wonderful part of Montreal. And then in the winter, well, we're indoors, but that's fine. It's winter in Canada, so we're naturally indoors. So it's quite an... How many employees do you have, and how much revenue, if that's a relevant question?
Yeah, actually, we have... But you're right. Just go back to what you just said about the festival, because people don't realize I traveled a lot, because... since I'm in culture, and people don't realize that what we have here in Montreal is really unique, because you can walk as you said during a summer, and it's really magic because you can listen to a concert, outdoor concert, without any noise. There is no the streets are closed, Yes, all the cultural district that we call Quartier des Spectacles was built around, of course, the Place des Arts. So for the Jazz Festival, but not for Nuit d'Afrique, Présence Autochtone. So we have some others. So this is really unique to Montreal. And yes, it's during the summer, but more and more, it's also during the winter because we embrace the fact that we are that we are up to the north. So we go outside. So a lot of activities. So yes, your question was about, I'm sorry.
How many employees and
so
revenues?
Yes, in terms of employees, we have 250 employees, administrative staff, but also staff for all the events that we have.
With some events, you have hundreds of other people come in just for the evening, I presume.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. For the bar, for the parking, yeah. For, you know, ushers. Yes. We have, a big team and contractors for all the maintenance because it's the equivalent of Place Ville-Marie.
Yeah.
And I hope that we will talk about it later on. So, yes, and there Place des Arts did like a study of all the economic retombé, you know, the economic, and it was about 75 million.
Economic impact. Yes,
thank you for that. Economic impact. The economic impact of Place des Arts, like 5 years ago, were like more than $55 million. But we are not the producers. This is the business model that is really unique to Montreal. We don't own the resident companies, meaning the Opera, the Théâtre Jean Duceppe, the OSM, Orchestre Métropolitain, Grand Ballet. So we welcome them, we rent the halls, and we sell the tickets. So that means that our budget is not so big because it's around $40 million each year. But we manage much more in terms of ticket sales. But you know it's a continuum. So we enter the money to the ticket sales, and we give back to the producers and to the artistic organizations. Yes, so it's really unique. So the numbers seem maybe not so big, but it's the economic impact is much more.
You've been to hundreds of concerts. What was the most memorable concert you've been to? The one that you go, that was it. It was just so magic.
You know, it's a very difficult question, and usually I don't answer that question because probably the best one will be the next one that I will go to.
Well, that's the right answer.
Yeah, I'm privileged. You know, I'm very, very excited when I go to a concert or to a show and to see the magic relationship between an artist and the public, and after the show that, you know, they show, the public showed, you know, their happiness. So it could be anything, and I'm very curious, so it could be anything. But I was really privileged to see Maison Symphonique because it's really rare that you see a construction of a concert hall, a world-class concert hall in your life. You can think about the next time we will build a concert hall here. And so the first concert was very, very special for me to see because I saw all the construction and then I saw the magic at the first concert.
I interviewed four older jazz musicians. Then I went to their concert. And in some ways, there's nothing like an old pro, is an expression in English. That in some ways, a performer in their 50s and 60s are just, they've done it so long, they're so good at it. Like a Kent Nagano, you know, as a younger man, he was great, but I think it got even better. Just because he knew what he was doing and had a sense for the audience. So there's something about experience in an artist, you know, you get too old at some point, but there's something about someone who's done it a long time is they're just some, and they, like this group was singing songs that I remember as a kid. Mm-hmm. And it would just be, you know, like they were just, and the audience went wild. Like, I guess when Rolling Stones, like, you know, when Mick Jagger goes, ain't got no satisfaction, like the audience goes nuts. And if they don't sing it, everybody's upset. But on the other hand, like, you know, I've talked to someone and say, don't you get sick of it? But they go, no, we love this song. It's our signature song, and the audience loves it. So the artists are very interesting. At work, we need more creativity.
Yes.
But you, I mean, what your people, the artists are creative. And you were at the MSO for years, at the symphony. What have you learned about creativity? And how do we get more creativity?
Yeah, you know, it's right, creativity is important. We value a lot today entrepreneurs. We value a lot today startup, but it starts with creativity. And for that, you need arts, because arts can unlock creativity. Mm. So it is very important for me to have arts and part of the education system, because it's something that you have to practice in your brain. But that doesn't mean that creativity means innovation, because creativity or an idea is really when it will solve a problem, when it will create value, when it will invent a new processes that we can talk about innovation. And in regarding this matter, arts can help your, can improve your ability to connect the dots. Because as I mentioned before, it's doing some arts, it's kind, it's so complex, it help you to solve abstract problems in an abstract way. Mm. So creativity is so important into all the business, especially today, because we are managing the uncertainty, the unknown, the fourth industrial revolution. So we certainly need the creativity in our business, every business, and every business unit also. Creativity is not only for the artistic side or, you know, the production side. It's in every business unit that you need creativity.
I've been interested to learn about the transition from STEM to STEAM. So that's adding arts to STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, mathematics. It seems people from all disciplines are recognizing the value of creating thinking and realizing that artistically minded people have a lot to contribute. What's your thought on this idea of adding arts to STEM?
Yeah, probably I will repeat a bit what I've just said. But I don't know if you remember the book Artists, Craftsmen, and Technocrats.
Yes.
Okay, so again, we value people who invent products, processes, and we are in the middle of this age where we are seeking for a new ways of doing things. We are talking about blockchain, we are talking about everything that, you know, we have to invent. So we certainly need arts in doing that. And if we need arts, because it will help your creativity, you need to practice it, you know, when you are very young. And so art should be part, it's not something that you do when you have time. It's really something that we need in society. That's for sure. Arts for itself, but arts also can be part of everything that you do in a certain way, because those people, they are artists, you know, they really are. But yes.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Marie-José de Rocher, CEO of Montreal's Place des Arts. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. Next up, we'll ask and learn more about the business side at Place des Arts.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, you're listening to the CEO Series. Today I'm speaking with Marie-José de Rocher, CEO of Montreal's Place des Arts. Arts and business are often taken as opposites. You bring them together. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you're right that we like to oppose arts and business and artists and business people. But you know, in life we like to oppose things, and we like to even polarize opinions. But life is more nuanced than that. We've just talked about the importance of arts for creativity and creativity for innovation. So we certainly need arts for our business organizations. But the opposite, if I may say that, we certainly need business to make arts a success, make arts organizations grow and thrive. So there is no opposition. We need both, and we need both in all kind of business or arts. And I think this is something that today we are more aware of. Maybe there is less opposition, I hope, in terms of that. But yes, I'm concerned when I see that arts is put aside and it's all science that is important. No, yeah. Mathematics and arts are very closed. So yes, it's important for me.
We have stars in business, or they think they're stars, like the star lawyer, star, but you have real stars in arts. Yeah. And you've met some world famous people where you walk down the street and people go, that's, you know, someone really well known. How do you manage stars and their egos?
Yes. Probably now my stars at Plazas are the artistic organizations and producers, that they are themselves managing stars. But if, to answer your question, maybe I can go back to my OSM years with a music director. And I think that my first answer will be follow them.
Okay.
Follow them, put the dream first, capture their dream, but ask the question why. Yes, you know, the why is so important. What are we trying to accomplish here? What is the aspiration? And so you will be more able to realizing it. But it's so easy to say it's not possible. And those stars come with crazy ideas. And I remember I work on so many projects that never happened after that. But for nine that, you know, didn't happen, one happened. So, and also what is important into that is when you try to realize again, probably you will have to refine it. And so, and sometimes when you have limited resources,
yeah,
it can bring out the creativity and to go back to that. But another important thing that is important into that is the kind of relationship that you will establish with the star. Because yes, you have to make sure that they can rely on you in realizing their dream, their ideas. But at the same time, it's you can talk about finance. You have to be very transparent. At some point, people said to me, oh no, don't talk to money with a music director. Yes, of course, because it will help for the output. So be transparent. Build also the confidence that a star can have on you, and build your credibility. You know, maybe this person is the star, but you are the manager. So it's really to establish a deep dialogue with a star and to put maybe the barriers. So it's a question of confidence in each other, really.
You have various experiences as a leader now for quite a few years as a senior leader. What are some of your thoughts about leadership, and how is your leadership evolved over the years?
Yes, I don't think that we change, but we certainly evolve, I hope.
Okay.
And actually, it was my case. So principle may remain the same, but the tone and manner change over time or evolve. I like the word evolve. But some of, if I may name a few, the first one will be to reach for excellence. Maybe it's a recurring theme with me. But reaching for excellence, it means look into the future for your organization, but it's in the little things that you do every day. The second is really to managing by wandering around. Maybe, especially in the kind of organization that I manage, be a client, walk on the ground, talk to employees. It's so important, and to share your experience. It's very important not to be your office alone. It's so easy. The third one will be to, I really believe in the collective leadership, what I call collective leadership. Meaning, yes, with my team, but also I value a lot all the, what we call the middle management. And beside all the meetings that I have with them, or when I walk around and talk with them, I make sure that I have a sit down once a year with them and to have really an open discussions and ask for their advice. They're always surprised, but I'm interested to have this feedback. Another one that I can think of is really what we call the empowerment of employees. But what does it mean? It means also to be responsible and accountable. So if you have a problem, as an example, you can complain, but then next step, try to find a solution. And if you don't find a solution, if you don't know, ask for help. This is very important. And if we do mistakes, we do mistakes all the time. What is interesting for me is how we can learn from those mistakes. I always used to say, we will do some other mistakes, but we will try not to repeat, you know, the previous ones. And so I'm really into that because we need to improve processes in our organization. So often it's when you do mistakes or something is not going very well that you learn from that. So very important for me. And of course, one of my value that is very important for me is pleasure. We work hard into our organization, but we should have fun too. So
delighted to have with me one of my former MBA students, Amanda Bohn, who worked with me on the CEO series at McGill and is also very much a performing artist herself. Amanda, you had a couple questions for Marie-José.
Thanks, Carl. Hi, Marie-José. I'm so happy to be here with you today.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you, how important do you think it is to have personal experience in the world of the arts, as you do, in order to be a successful leader of an arts organization?
I think it helps, but at the same time, the most important thing is to be sensitive to the sector that you manage. So more than knowing and to be an expert of it, it's really the sensitivity that you have for the sector. And you have also to learn from your sector. As an example, I never, you know, manage a facility like Place des Arts. So it's a big facility. We said that it's the largest performing arts center. So the first thing that I did when I came in was to visit the basement, you know, because I needed to know. And I learned about engineering a lot since 3 years, you know. We won't talk about it, but, you know, I can talk about different things. But it's so important that you learn. And as a leader, you know yourself, I need to understand the business units that I manage. So not to be an expert, but just to understand what we are trying to accomplish in those business units.
Yeah, also, I wonder, what are you excited about going forward for Place des Arts? Where do you see sort of the future of the performing arts in Montreal and maybe specifically in this organization?
Yeah, we just talked about this COVID crisis, and I think that crises are really accelerators of trends in terms of when we can talk about sustainable development, which is very important for Place des Arts and a D subject to me. We can talk about DEI and how to be inclusive. And I think that for Place des Arts, we are facing some issues in terms of maintaining this facility in good shape, how we are, all the effort for the environment and for the sustainable, all the sustainable development, but also how can we welcome everyone? So meanings, how can we open the doors? Everyone, we have this responsibility to open the doors and to make sure that everyone can participate in this cultural life.
This has been the CEO Series. Thank you very much for inviting us to speak with you today, MJ. I would also like to thank our show producer, Gabby, our technical producer, Marco, and our scriptwriter, Stephanie. And to our listeners, thanks for tuning in. À la prochaine.
Hello, and welcome to another Producer's Cut edition of the CEO Series. My name is Gabby Hartshorn-Mell. I am a student at Professor Carl Moore at McGill and also the producer of this show. This week, Professor Moore has granted me the opportunity to share my favorite parts of our newest episode, the interview with Place des Arts CEO, MJ Desrochers. I am very excited to get started. I want to jump right in with the statement from Madame Desrochers.
When I did my master's degree in piano and performance, so that means that I had to do a lot of recitals alone, I was not quite sure what I would like to do after my master's degree. And my piano teacher said to me, you know, Marie-Josée, the most difficult thing that you would have to accomplish is to play and recital. And he was wrong. And he said, after that, you will be able to embrace any career that you want. And was he was right, because, of course, studying music, not only to do a master's degree, but if you study music, yes, you will learn, of course, the discipline. But you will learn also to plan in advance. You cannot begin to practice a week before your recital. So you need, like an athlete, you need to plan in advance. But also, and it gave me a sense of analysis, because what people don't know is behind the music, there is a real structure of analysis. It's like mathematics. So I was very good at it, and it was my strength. And as a pianist, the structure is horizontally and vertically. And of course, it gave me a sense of anticipation, because when you play, you know, a 15-minute piece, you have to anticipate all the time, but to be at the present. So the notion of time is very important when you play in recital. And finally, of course, it helped me to manage my stress. Yes, still to this date, he was right. There's nothing like stressful like being alone with your piano without any, you know, score in front of you, and to play very well. But at the end of the day, music is about emotion. So, you know, beyond everything that I just said, you need to worry about the communication with the public, because it's about emotion.
Just to provide some context, Ms. Desrochers studied music at HEC Montreal and developed something of a pianist's mindset. Now, I also have some experience playing the piano, although it did not go nearly as far as Ms. Desrochers. However, I can very much relate to her sentiments about what you learn from playing the piano. There are some highly transferable skills to be gained from the study and performance of music, including organization, planning ahead, and public relations, as MJ alluded to. Especially the last skill, because there is nothing more stressful than performing in front of an audience. Professor Moore often asks his guests how their background affects their perspective in the management of the company. For example, how the engineering mindset or the accounting mindset impact management. I think Ms. Desrochers reminded us that music and performance as well bring its own mindset to the table. Professor Moore's next question is very interesting.
I've been interested to learn about the transition from STEM to STEAM. So that's adding arts to STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, mathematics. It seems people from all disciplines are recognized the value of creating thinking and realizing that artistically minded people have a lot to contribute. What's your thought on this idea of adding arts to STEM?
Ms. Desrochers' response is enlightening. Adding an A to STEM is a long time coming and important step to remind everyone of its importance alongside the scientists. As MJ is about to point out, everyone is an artist, and this is something that should be integrated into daily life, just like other aspects of education. As we spoke about before, art offers a mindset development opportunity that benefits other facets of life. I will let Ms. Desrochers expand.
I don't know if you remember the book Artists, Craftsmen, and Technocrats.
Yes.
Okay, so again, we value people who invent products, processes, and we are in the middle of this age where we are seeking for new ways of doing things. We are talking about blockchain. We are talking about everything that, you know, we have to invent. So we certainly need arts in doing that. And if we need arts because it will help your creativity, you need to practice it, you know, when you are very young. And so art should be part. It's not something that you do when you have time. It's really something that we need in society. That's for sure. Arts for itself, but arts also can be part of everything that you do in a certain way, because those people, they are artists, you know? They really are. But yes.
Professor Moore also asked Ms. Desrochers about the clash or potential antagonism between arts and business.
Yeah, you're right that we like to oppose arts and business and artists and business people. But you know, in life, we like to oppose things and we like to even polarize opinions. But life is more nuanced than that. We've just talked about the importance of arts for creativity and creativity for innovation. So we certainly need arts for our business organizations. But the opposite, if I may say that, we certainly need business to make arts a success, make arts organizations grow and thrive. So there is no opposition. We need both, and we need both in all kind of business or arts. And I think this is something that today we are more aware of. Maybe there is less opposition, I hope, in terms of that. But yes, I'm concerned when I see that arts is put aside and it's all science that is important. No, yeah. Mathematics and arts are very closed. So yes, it's important for me.
Arts for creativity and creativity for innovation, as Ms. Desrochers puts it. I think this is said beautifully. Her answer to this question reminds me of a conversation Professor Moore's strategic management class had with Daniel Lamar, CEO of Cirque du Soleil, last semester. According to Mr. Lamar, business operations should be integrated with the company purpose. In his case, as CEO, one of his closest employees was the clown that the previous CEO had hired for him, because at the heart of Cirque du Soleil lies entertainment, joy, and humor. In a similar facet, I think that Ms. Desrochers points out that there does not have to be the opposition between business and arts, although these practices are traditionally diverged. They can somehow, or in some way, be integrated within one another. Professor Moore also asked about managing Gen Z. Now, this unfortunately did not make it into the radio show this week. However, I would be delighted to share these exclusive responses with you.
As a leader, you should adapt to every profile that you have in your organization. It's your role and your responsibility to adapt. And my first eye-opener about generations was years ago. So as a leader, I realized that you cannot manage others the way I was managed. And in terms of the young people in the marketplace, I found them very very aware of concerns of today's world. And they have strong values too. So that means they are expecting your organization to have values also, but more than that, to know if our values fit with theirs. So it's very demanding. The second part is that they like to contribute. There is a conversation right now about ambition, but I think that they can contribute a lot of your growth of your organization, but they are also interested in knowing what the organization can do for their growth. So it's really a two-way working relationship, and they are very deep. And I know that a couple of weeks ago, I have them here in my office. My office is always open for that kind of conversation, but sometimes it goes like a very philosophically, conversation. So you need to do some research and really to understand their reality and to make them realizing what is our reality, yes, in terms of the organization.
Since starting my position as producer, I have heard this question posed by Professor Moore on countless occasions. The answer usually resembles something like Ms. Desrochers', and I do want to say that it makes me proud of my generation to know that we are driving an impactful, recognizable change in the workforce that we hopefully transition all industries to prioritize other values besides profit. I think this is a nice way to end off. Thank you very much for tuning in to this mini episode of Professor Moore's CEO series. It has been an honor to share my ideas with you. Thank you very much to Professor Moore for allowing me the space to contribute my thoughts. As always, à la prochaine!